Only who could go to China?
There's an old Vulcan proverb. Only Nixon could go to China.
A generation after Nixon went to Beijing, the first big sit-down between U.S. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner and his Chinese counterpart may just be a turning point for the global economy. What music will they make from this meeting? Sirius opera or something else? Geithner in China. We're praying for opera on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. It's Monday, June 1st. I'm John Hockenberry, flying solo. We've got Femi Okeh here in the studio with me to do the news. Coming up, we're going to take a look at the details of that historic meeting between Timothy Geithner and his Chinese counterpart and all the other stories of the week in the agenda segment with Marcus Mabry. We're going to also look at some frustrating roadblocks to new cancer treatments. And are they going to get a senator in Minnesota? All this and more ahead. But first, these headlines. In the headlines, General Motors is set to file for bankruptcy this morning. Finally, it'll be one of the largest filings in American history. President Obama will speak in support of GM's move this afternoon. The new deal will give the government majority ownership of the automaker. The Obama administration says bankruptcy shouldn't last longer than 3 months, but we'll see what a test of the administration this is when we talk in our agenda segment just a few moments from now. Chrysler, of course, is learning all about bankruptcy. Sunday, a bankruptcy judge approved Fiat's purchase of most of Chrysler's assets. That sale clears the way for Chrysler to finish reorganizing and exit the bankruptcy process. It's now June, and Minnesota is still one senator short. Today, the state's Supreme Court will hear arguments in the ongoing court battle over who won the race last year. Democrat Al Franken has a 312-vote lead over Republican Norm Coleman in the current count. Coleman wants the court to count a batch of rejected absentee ballots. We'll have more on that. Femi, what else is going on?
Good morning, everybody. There are reports this morning that North Korea is prepping another long-range missile test. South Korean media say that Pyongyang is moving its most high-tech missile to a launch pad. The missile is believed to be powerful enough to reach Alaska. Wichita, Kansas police are questioning a suspect in the murder of the controversial abortion doctor George Tiller. He was shot and killed in his church yesterday. Tiller was one of a handful of American doctors providing late-term abortions. He had been shot before and threatened many times over the years. Today's the first day of hurricane season. Forecasters are expecting an average season with up to 3 major hurricanes. And oil prices are surging this morning, nearly $68 a barrel. That's almost double the March price.
And that's definitely something they're going to be talking about in China between Timothy Geithner and his Chinese counterpart there. Asian markets closed up this morning. The S&P starts trading at 919 and the Dow begins at 8,500. Futures trading suggests a flat to positive opening. So we've had Fred Thompson, Arnold Schwarzenegger,
yes,
Jesse Ventura, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. We've had Sonny Bono.
Oh, I forgot
what
about him.
What other entertainers do we want to take office in America? And Al Franken could become the state's junior senator. The Franken-Coleman face-off in Minnesota Supreme Court is in the news. We want to know, what other entertainers do you see in office? That guy from House should be Surgeon General, right?
He would be excellent.
Surgeon General. Winona Ryder, Attorney General.
Good choice.
877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Star Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here. It's Monday morning. Let's get your week started off right, huh?
Our government.
Bailout.
Your government.
Energy resources.
Healthcare.
Iraq and Afghanistan.
Global financial recession.
The work that needs to be done.
What's going on? What's going on? What's going on?
Yes, the stories this week to pay attention to. It's Monday, so that means only Marcus Mabry and the agenda. He's the international business editor of the New York Times in the studio. Marcus, welcome back.
Good morning.
And Magdi Abdulhadi, Arab Affairs Analyst for our partners, the BBC, joins us from London. Magdi, thanks for coming back to the program.
Hello, good morning.
Let's begin with a story that I talked about right at the top of the hour. President Obama and Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner are both on the road. Geithner is in China. Only Geithner could go to China this week. It seems to me, Marcus, that this is a huge story. You've got the biggest creditor nation meeting the biggest debtor nation. It's almost on the scale of these two nations and the kind of numbers they're talking about. Supply meets demand. What's the significance of this meeting? How do you see it?
Well, that's exactly right, John. Of course, and we're the world's largest debtor nation, and they're the creditor nation. So, in some ways, it's China who is in charge in some ways here. And this is at some point, this may be, reflect on international and both economic and political power. China is the one who is lending us money at this point, and Geithner's going to be interesting to see who's in charge. Will it be Geithner? Will it be his Chinese counterparts? He's an old China hand. He's got experience there. Grew up part of his youth there. He's a guy who really has great affinity for China, great respect for China, but he has had some missteps in the past with what he said. For instance, when he said it might be something to consider when their central banker suggested that maybe there should be another international currency than the dollar. He quickly had to retract that.
Well, and here he's trying to make a case that this is a two-way street, not a one-way street. Listen.
The effectiveness of U.S. policies will depend in part on China's and the effectiveness of yours on ours.
He's trying to make the case in sort of retooling himself from that, stop manipulating your currency, Geithner, that we saw during the confirmation hearings as look, you folks are way too dependent on U.S. demand, even though we're too dependent upon you buying our debt. Is he going to be able to make that argument?
Well, it's interesting. He says that, and the Chinese themselves have also said they're interested in reworking this relationship as well, because they have said, for instance, they are too dependent on Americans buying their goods as well. And they said, for instance, they're worried about American profligacy. They said they're worried about their long-term investment, which is $1 to $2 trillion of American government debt that they hold. They're worried about all the money we're spending to get ourselves out of this recession. And what will the long-term impact of all that American debt be on the value of the debt they currently hold? And the more money we print, the less valuable their money is over time. And so they, too, are interested in reworking this relationship. The question is, how do they do this duty dance this week? I expect both sides to really be diplomatic and conciliatory this week and to really talk a lot about being partners and to really kind of bring down the kind of rhetoric that we've seen sometimes aggressively hurling across the Pacific Ocean.
I mean, one of the things, you take a drink of water there, Marcus, so one of the things we note is that human rights doesn't appear anywhere in this discussion. Not that it necessarily would with Treasury secretaries, but it's fairly important. Geithner gives a speech tonight at 10:15 in Beijing. Is there any sense that we should be watching interest rates here in the United States based on this meeting? There's been volatility last week. Is that likely to continue?
If there are mistakes, if Geithner has any missteps, if he says again, for instance, oh, well, maybe we should consider the idea there'd be another international currency, I think we can expect rates here to spike further. We've seen a 75 basis points, it's three-quarters of a percentage point rise in those rates over the last week. So right now there's huge pressure, and it comes from all that spending we're doing. And if the Chinese keep buying short-term debt and eschewing long-term debt, we can expect those rates to keep rising.
Interesting. All right. Magdi Abdul-Hadi, I want your reaction to Barack Obama leaving town, going to Cairo, Egypt, to give a speech to the Muslim world, presumably, and listen to this, it's going to reflect or expand upon these remarks delivered in his inauguration address.
America must play its role in ushering in a new era of peace. To the Muslim world, we seek a new way forward based on mutual interest and mutual respect.
Magdi, are Muslims around the world more interested in what Barack Obama is going to have to say about the Arab-Israeli conflict in his speech in Cairo, or what's going on, say, in South Asia as Pakistan, with the U.S.'s assistance, attempts to finish off the Taliban?
I think it depends which part of the world you're in. If you're in Pakistan or Afghanistan, so you'll be more interested in what he has to say on that. But in the Arab world, where the Palestinian-Israeli conflict has played out for the past 60 years and so, that is the primary concern. And the speech is eagerly awaited. And there are, you know, every day there are various newspaper articles, columnists, editorials dealing with the issue. What will Barack Obama say when he comes to Cairo on Thursday? And broadly speaking, you can divide the reactions and the speculations into three categories. The skeptics believe it won't make a difference. The pragmatists say, let's wait and see. And the optimists, seeing it an opportunity the Arabs should grab. They think Obama means what he says when he says change and peace and dialogue and reaching out to the Muslim world, and he will deliver. But much will depend on how the Arabs will react and play the cards.
Well, of course, I want to, you know, the Arab, Pakistanis are not Arabs, but I'm wondering if there are more optimists regarding the Arab world and the Arab-Israeli conflict than the situation in South Asia. Magdi?
Well, the Arab-Israeli conflict, of course, has ramifications across the world and touches Muslims wherever they are in the world because of the status of Jerusalem as a holy city in Islam. And the speculation and the expectation is whether Mr. Obama will reveal a new roadmap or a vision or a plan to help the Palestinians create a state. And if the Arabs and the Muslims like what they hear, the question is then whether Mr. Obama can deliver. The skeptics, as I pointed out earlier, believe that there is a limit to what Mr. Obama can do or what kind of the level of pressure he can bring to bear upon Israel, and then he will run up against very, very strong and powerful interests. The other really equally, by no means less important issue, whether he will refer to human rights and democracy in the region, because that was...
And in Egypt.
And particularly in Egypt. Yeah. To remind our listeners, he will be meeting a man who's been in power for 28 years, and he's turned Egypt into what many believe some kind of a police state. Others believe even it is a military dictatorship. So what will he say to Mubarak? He may not say it in public. Will he say something? Will he give a gesture of some kind towards human rights activists and democracy activists who expects him to exert some kind of pressure? And what he says on that particular crucial issue, or what he fails to say or doesn't say in public, will be the subject of debate and speculation and reactions for weeks to come.
Magdi, quickly, what do you think? Is there anything Barack Obama can do to bring Hamas into this dynamic of the Palestinians and the Israelis, or is this something that's going to have to wait?
I mean, the only thing will be to talk to Hamas. I mean, that is the...
Right.
The opinion that many people have been expressing for a while, that the only way to move this forward is to talk to Hamas. But Hamas, as you know, is classified as a terrorist organization by America and various Western governments, and that will be a sea change if this was ever to happen. It's unlikely.
Sure.
I see this happening in the near future.
I would agree with you. Well, speaking of rogue nations or rogue institutions or rogue movements, here's Defense Secretary Robert Gates.
We will not stand idly by as North Korea builds the capability to wreak destruction on any target in the region or on us.
Marcus Mabry, a long-range missile possibly being assembled and readied for a launch sometime in the next several weeks, a continuing test of the Obama administration in foreign policy terms?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's ironic that, you know, there's the administration has talked, and the president talked last week a lot about how he's going to, this will not stand when North Korea had its last missile test. And in fact, it has stood. And of course, there's very little the administration or the UN or anyone else can do about it. And the administration has yet to grapple with that reality. This missile is another test of that. And the fact that the U.S. Doesn't really have many options that are palatable in North Korea, even fewer than they do in Iran, in fact.
So finally, Marcus, how do you feel? You're probably a majority owner, along with me and every other American taxpayer in General Motors.
Well,
good today?
well,
those are your Chevrolets.
It's very interesting because I think, you know, the administration has done an amazing job of really, you know, moving very quickly here. It's been an extraordinarily rapid move since they've come to power to move this company toward bankruptcy.
Although we should just remind people the headlines: the bankruptcy is expected to be filed today, and Barack Obama will talk about it specifically.
Absolutely, 8 a.m. This morning we expect in Manhattan, the bankruptcy court here in the Southern District of Manhattan. We expect that GM will file for bankruptcy. The president will speak shortly thereafter that, and then the GM's current CEO will speak shortly after that. We all own it. Hopefully we will own it not for very long. The administration, I think, is saying 6 to 18 months in bankruptcy and then out, they hope. But the question is, who's going to buy a car when millions more Americans are going to lose their jobs in the next few months?
Magdi Abdelhadi, does the rest of the world care that the U.S. car companies have gone bankrupt? Do we take a hit? Are we on the ropes in the international world?
Well, I mean, you know, of course the rest of the world cares, because what happens in American economy affects the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. To a certain extent, the Middle East has been slightly shielded from the global crisis. But
well, I'm glad it's at least a headline. I'm glad it's at least a headline. Marcus Mabry and Magdi Abdelhadi from our partners, the BBC and the New York Times, thanks so much. That's your agenda.
Right now. You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
869-8253.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.